Hey everybody, today's episode is sponsored by Penzu, your personal journal in the cloud. Penzu is where millions of people keep their most private thoughts, all locked with a secret password. Go to penzu.com, that's spelled P-E-N-Z-U now, and sign up for a free account. For extra security and fun customizations, go to penzu.com/GoPro on your computer and use promo code Radical for $5 off your Pro or Pro Plus subscription. Once again, that's promo code Radical. Now let's get to the show.
This is The Radical Therapist, a space where we explore the intersections of collaborative therapy, philosophy, art, and science and technology in a post-Freud, post-psychology world.
Welcome to The Radical Therapist. This is your host, Chris Hoff. We are at episode 21, and we got a great one for you today. Just to give you a little hint, imagine taking therapeutic documents to a Trump rally. And that is exactly what our guest today did, and you're going to hear about it eventually on this podcast. So, but before we get there, let me just do some quick business news or what have you. I've been getting a lot of requests for stickers, and I appreciate that, and I'm sending them out, and you are sending me pictures back of you with the stickers, which is great. If you want to see some of the most recent ones, go to the website at theradicaltherapist.com, and you can see them there. And so if you have not requested stickers yet, please do that. Just shoot me an email at theradicaltherapist@gmail.com, and I will get you out some Radical Therapist podcast stickers without delay. And really appreciate you getting the pictures back to me. It's kind of fun, and I really enjoy it. So thank you for that. As always, you can support the show by going to iTunes and rating and reviewing the show on iTunes. We really appreciate that if you would do that. It just helps us get visible. So, or at least that's what they tell me. So anyway, I think that's it. And we're also on, just because I haven't done this in a while, we're on Instagram. You can follow The Radical Therapist on Instagram. We're on Twitter at The Rad Therapist. And we have a Facebook page. Have you liked the Facebook, The Radical Therapist Facebook page yet? Please go do that. I'm trying to be more consistent about throwing stuff up on there. So, and I think if you are liking it, it wouldn't force me to do more of that. So please think about doing that. Anyway, so let's get to today's show. We got a good one. As most of you know, or I think a lot of our niche followers know, that narrative therapy has a long history of using letter writing or therapeutic documents as a key aspect of the practice. And these documents take different forms that include letters of recording sessions, documents of knowledge and affirmation, documents contributing to rites of passage, and documents that assist in circulating preferred stories, and finally documents of celebrations, prize givings, and awards. And there's just been a rich history of using these kinds of documents in narrative practice, and I know in other practices as well. And our next guest, Ori Alon from the Center for Supportive Bureaucracy, or the Empowering Clerks Network, is our special guest. And you really have to go to the website to see all the things that he's doing with documents, supportive documents, and making these things very accessible to people, not just therapists, that want to use these kinds of documents. And I think you just really have to go to the website, and therapists especially, you might want to, he makes it real easy for you to begin to use kind of therapeutic documents in your practice. And they're fun, and I think really powerful and helpful. And I think you'll find that as well. So let me introduce our guest tonight. The Empowering Clerks Network founder, Ori Alon, is an artist, writer, teacher. He lives in Beacon, New York with his wife, Anna, and three kids. And besides serving as the ECN Executive Empowering Clerk, Alon creates comics, a comic series with postage stamps, and he writes the Magic Bagel children's book series. And he performs and interacts with audiences regularly in the Participatory Art Project, Empowering Clerk Network. And since 2006, the ECN has been offering playful paperwork services in locations such as the Hudson Valley Center for Contemporary Art, Israel Museum in Jerusalem, Clearwater Festival, and he's led workshops in various locations, including temples, schools, on the streets, in living rooms, and online. And the Empowering Clerks Network is an international organization providing playful paperwork services to diverse populations, and they offer pop-up office hours in various community schools, workplaces, events, and you can kind of access their documents, which include, just as an example, joy permits, refurbished report cards, forgiver's licenses, Class A and B, adult special achievement stickers, certificates of recognition, validation tickets, apology declaration, pain deeds, true friend diplomas. There's just a bunch of worthwhile and useful documents that he has made available for us and for anybody. And also, so go to his website at thesupportivebureaucracy.org, and I'll have this in the show notes as well too. But without further ado, you're going to hear about all of this from Ori. So let's meet Ori. All right. Hi, Ori. Welcome to the Radical Therapist Podcast.
Hello, Chris. It's great to be here.
Yes.
Thank you for inviting me.
Glad you're here. And I really got captured. You sent me an email because I think you know a narrative therapist or somebody that's familiar with narrative therapy. And you'd kind of reached out. And I was really kind of captured by your work that you do around creating documents because... You know, in narrative therapy, there's a long history of kind of creating documents that record knowledges and preferred stories in permanent form. And you were doing this in a kind of a really creative way, in a really kind of expanded way. And I just thought it was very important to kind of introduce you to our listeners so they could kind of see the work that you were doing and maybe get involved in the work that you're doing and maybe even think about becoming an empowering clerk or being part of the Empowering Clerk Network. But before we get started on the Empowering Clerk Network and the Center for Supportive Bureaucracy, Ori, I was wondering if you could kind of maybe tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how you came into, I think you're an artist, a writer, a teacher, but how you came into the arts and how this kind of took shape for you.
How did I come into the arts? So that's a great question. So I loved writing in first grade. I always enjoy writing. As soon as I learned to read and write, I read books and I start writing stories. And in first grade, I actually wrote a story that had the word, a bad word in it. Excuse my French, they fuck. And the teacher saw it and she got very upset. And she sent me to the principal office and then I got scared. I didn't go to the principal office. I hid in the bathroom. And eventually I got home and then I was anxious and I went to sleep. I started writing horror stories and my mom got scared. So she sent me to the therapist.
Oh, wow.
And it was a week-long episode, and eventually the therapist said, like, oh, he's just bored in first grade, send him to second grade.
I like that solution.
It's a funny story now, but it took me many years later to start writing again.
Right. Oh, wow.
When I was 18, my father passed away, and then I started writing more after that experience. I got back to writing. So for 12 years, I didn't write. And then when I explored more writing, at the same time, I found my first typewriter. And I was already in the army service, and I used to hide in the medic room and just like isolate myself and just write. And then I found how empowering was this experience for me, and how freeing from the experience of the army service. So I start writing stuff and posting it on the wall of the army base, which is kind of similar to things that I do now in a way.
Right.
And then I got finding the first time that I basically had audience. And it was also I wasn't supposed to post poetry on army base, so you know there was some tension there, and I just kept writing, and in some way writing really helped me to maybe it sounds very dramatic, but to survive in some way in these hard experiences of the mandatory army service in Israel. I grew up in Israel. I forgot to say that.
Yeah. So you're required to be of service in Israel.
Exactly, right? Yeah. There's a mandatory army. So that's a longer story. We can talk about it later, but some of my art is about that. And later on, I got into art school. And in art, I came to art school as a guy who enjoyed typewriters and collect typewriters and write on, like, basically a writer. And I had no experience in participatory art, in performance art, and the art school that I went to was very a small and avant-garde art school in West Jerusalem, in Israel. And learning about this this different kind of artists, that how they involve the audience, kind of helped me a lot to develop my own project. And then I started a project of me helping people to write letters on vintage typewriters. So I was writing and they were dictating. So I would ask you, like, Chris, you know, who do you want to write a letter to yourself, to your family, friends, God, you know, babies who were about to be born, people who already passed away. And I was the writer. So I was the typist, like the old time. In some countries, they still have it in front of court or city hall. They have people who sit and write letter, for like a service they provide. But I offered people to write letters that are personal, not legal documents. That, but I used the same technique. I used the typewriter, which back then was already like an object of the past. And later on, I developed more participatory documents that I use the art and I use the things that the performance art offers, with some therapeutic aspect or with some aspect that help people release. Because many letters like would not be written without my like offering this service.
I imagine when you were transcribing those letters for people that you were hearing a lot of different stories of a lot of different emotions, I would imagine.
And I have to stay in my presence as a cleric. Like this was before I called it the Empowering Clerics Network, but I'm providing service. I mean, in some way, it's very much, I guess, like a therapist would feel. Like I couldn't get too engaged in the story.
Right. And so that started out as kind of a social practice or participatory practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then was it kind of because you were hearing some of these stories that led to, I guess we can move into the work you're doing around the Empowering Cleric and some of the documents that you started to produce out of that. Did that come out of that project?
Yes. So to kind of like to make a long story short, so I helped many people. I think by now we have maybe 200 people that I helped to write letters. It started in Israel, in Jerusalem, and then I moved it, did it in the U.S. too. In various places, so it can be just in a coffee shop or in the backyard or in galleries and museums that invited me to be part of events and festival, etc. So as I had people to write letters, I also had carbon paper that document the project, and then I made collections, booklet collections of some of these letters with permission, of course. So I already had some, some idea of what people want to write. I mean, I can, you know, if you make it into, if you use some a little scientific eyes, I guess. So some people wrote about love. Some people have wrote about, you know, it's mostly about relationship and God. But most of the letters, I think vast majority of the letters were sitting on somebody's, it's a Hebrew phrase, like you sit on your heart, like it's some burden that that you want to take out. And I was like, oh, there's this guy with a typewriter. Let me use him, you know, his service that he offers, and let me pull it out of myself. Now I'm not, you can do the same thing with a friend, with a therapist, with in many other ways or any other form of creative writing. But this specific action, that again, a tool that I kind of like use of performance art, really helped people. So I was already doing that project, and then it was 7 or 8 years ago. I was one of the organizers of an art event in West Jerusalem, and two guys came to this event. It was in the market, so it was in the night, in the market, in dark, and you know we brought some music and lights and different kind of artists to there, doing like small allies of the Middle Eastern market. And these guys came with a produce box and invited people to the office, which was a vegetable stand.
Oh.
And I saw it happening. I saw them, you know, it was like a very free a festival. It wasn't like a museum that you go and you pay a ticket. And I didn't know exactly what they're doing until they came to me. It's like, hey, you know, you're welcome to come to our office. And I was like, yeah, what's that? And they asked me if I had a bad school year. And of course, I had many bad. I don't know any adult who didn't have one bad experience in school, you know, maybe academically or socially or et cetera. So I told them about what I just told you about first grade. And then they issued me a new report card. And they start writing. I have it right here. They start writing, like, you know, Ori is a great child. He's wonderful. I got like straight A's, and they drew smileys, and then there's like a slot. So they just found a box of old report cards, right? It was just
right.
a piece of paper they right. found in the recycling bin, I guess. And so I got smileys, and then it's like, okay, so I'm the principal, and then he signed as a principal, and I'm going to be the parent, and they made a smiley for the parent, and then, and I was sitting there, and I still remember this experience. I was like, wow, it's like this relief of like they're using, it was obviously a joke, right? They weren't actual teacher and the principal, but they used this tool, this piece of paper to help me heal from my own, calling it trauma. I mean, it is a sort of a trauma, right? I had a very bad experience. A teacher and a person of authority told me that what I was doing was wrong, right? I was, in first grade, I didn't know that it's wrong to write certain words or that adults don't like certain words. And I was trying to express myself creatively. I didn't think I'm doing anything wrong. And I didn't do anything wrong, but I was told that. So they helped me heal from this very bad experience. And I remember thinking for many years, I was like, wow, there was like certain magic there. Mm. And I was already doing participatory artwork, but like I couldn't figure out what was so magical about this work. What was so and now I can tell in words, but like it was so simple, and it was using this object that for many of us is kind of like what some religious people would consider the cross or the Magen David or other religious symbols. Like we have a report card is a symbol of, in some way truth, right? Like
right,
you have
right.
this is what the teacher and the
it's a
the
judgment and a value statement, right?
Yeah, about who you are, and right. in some way it's like, again, like religious people see the word of God,
yeah,
or the word of the Bible, like this is the truth, right? So if your report card in any grade says something about you, that must be true. Now, if you see, I mean, I just visited my mom in Israel, and if you see my second grade, like I was a great student, and then in third grade, suddenly, oh, I'm not so great student.
Right.
Now, I didn't change from second. I mean, there was no dramatic change in me. It was like it was a different teacher who was more strict, more, so classes were less fun. So she wrote in the notes different things. So how could I change from, you know, second to third grade to be such a different person? So to answer your question, so they issued me this report card, and I kept it for many years, and I kept, like, I looked at it many times, and then after I immigrated to the US when I was 25, 26, and family here, kids, and I kept this report card, and I kept looking at it once in a while, and have it in my documents, and kept thinking about it, and I tried to do something similar. But then I got stuck in the design and how I didn't learn in the American education system. So it kind of like was, I kept thinking about it, but I didn't do much about it until I got a friend gave me parchment paper, like certificate paper. And then I looked at it and I remembered this report card, and I was like, okay, like that's not a report card, but like, let me do a diploma with it. So I made a document. It's called Certificate of Recognition that is blank. That you can fill up, and you can see the images on the website, supportivebureaucracy.org. So it's a blank document, and I interview people. And again, I ask you, Chris, what are the things that you like about yourself? And I fill it up, you know, Chris, you know, for supporting a family, for helping others, for helping the world, you know, for any, whatever you write. I mean, some people write for doing the dishes, and that's totally fine. You can get recognition for anything. And I again, like with the letters and the typewriters, I help people to phrase whatever they need to be, whatever recognition they deserve. So it's not just writing, like you can do it yourself. Like you can take a certificate of recognition and issue it to somebody else. But the more powerful aspect of it, I think, is the interview.
Yeah. Okay.
And most people, when I ask them, what do you like about yourself? They're like, oh, nobody ever asked me that question.
Yeah, right. I know. We know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's okay. The same as yeah. And at the end, I have a golden sticker, like a notary seal sticker.
Yeah.
And I made my own embosser, the Empowering Clerk's official seal, and we find a witness, we write the date. So it's like a legal process. So I'm kind of boring aspects of legal when you sign a document, or when you sign, you know, you have. I'm kind of the lawyer and the clerk and the notary as an artist.
Yeah.
And then I have a sheet protector and a frame. When I present the project, I often bring frames with me, so you can get a framed certificate of recognition for who you are.
Mm.
And in some way, when we get diplomas, like you study a few years and then you get a diploma, so it's all from top to bottom. Like the institution recognizes your whatever you did, and you rarely get recognition from. Like the same stage, like no human beings don't give one another recognition in that way, in that format of a parchment paper. Like you can say
right.
good things to one another, but like the object is when people see the sticker, and I'm amazed by how many people, no matter what their education level or social background, they when they see that I have a golden sticker, they have like, wow, you know, it's a sticker, you know, you can get it anytime, like any.
It still has that power, right? That golden sticker, right?
Exactly, yeah. And the embosser and the stamp, you know, I have a proof stamp. I have all sorts of stamps and tools that I use for that. But the basic reaction is like, wow, you can, like, there's like, you get validated.
That's great. So how did you get official? How did you start? When did it become official that you started this center of supportive bureaucracy? And then how did the Empowering Clerks Network begin to grow? And I know you're all over the world now, right? Or
it's an international organization. So we have an LLE status. LLE is a loving and liable entity.
Okay.
And it's a registered fictional entity. So it's still a fictional entity, but sure. We issue thousands of documents. So far we issued 35,000 documents. We keep printing, and I have a stack of joy permits right here. So I have these all joy permits. So we print many, many documents. And how it evolved is when I started issuing the certificates of recognition, and people enjoyed the document and were wanting to issue them as well. Then I ordered another embosser and another embosser and another document and another document, and then. I start calling it Office Hours and the Center for Supportive Bureaucracy, and we came to the first big event was we had the Open Studios in Beacon that I offered the services in a coffee shop there.
Hmm.
And then there was the Clearwater Festival, which was a big music festival in the East Coast, 45 minutes north of New York City.
Hmm.
So I asked more people to join me as clerks, as empowering clerks, and then. I already issued a forgiver's license, which we can talk more about later.
Yeah.
So basically, I invited more people to issue documents, and I gave them PECO, a Portable Empowering Clerk Office,
okay.
Which has the embosser and folder with a bunch of documents. And it's kind of a humoristic project, right? You have, you know, I'm not an authority. I don't have any legal authority over
official anything. Authority, right?
Yeah, but it became, and more people wanted to participate, and more people asked me for, hey, you know, can I get a OK Parent Award or this certificate, an apology declaration, or and it kind of evolved naturally. More documents came, and more people wanted to participate, and then so right now we have about 30 clerks with the actual embosser. And hundreds. I actually don't have any number of that, but many people print the documents themselves or get documents and issue them to others. So it kind of evolved beyond. I mean, just today somebody asked me for, we have an open carry permit for musical instruments.
Okay.
So you can carry your guitar or banjo or any other instruments in the street and play music. We encourage people to play music in the streets and bring art to public places. So somebody I don't even know that received document for somebody I don't know. Contact me to ask for more documents and stuff. So it evolved beyond my. I don't have any records of who issued documents and where.
That's like great. It. Yeah, that's exciting. So how would one of our listeners, you know, if some of these therapists wanted to begin to or become empowering clerks and wanted mm-hmm. to be able to issue these documents to clients of theirs, how would they do that? How would they get a hold of you, or what's the process?
So the easiest thing is you can just go to the website and download. Most of the documents are available to download yourself. And you can just download them and print them. Like you can print a joy permit. You need to follow regulations. So joy permit is valid for 6 months.
Yeah.
And it gives permission to be joyful for 6 months. Once it's expired, you can go to supportivebureaucracy.org and renew it, or you can use Whiteout.
Great.
So you can extend it yourself. So this is, for example, one document that is very easy to print and issue. We also have branches. More and more people are starting branches. The biggest one now is in Oregon, in Bend, Oregon. And the empowering clerk there also print forgiveness license and all the other documents. Or you can just order the document or the ECSK 2.0 empowering clerk starter kit in the website as well. And we're going to send you pre-sealed documents. And if you see that you're really into it and you're really excited about the process, you can also get an embosser and a golden notary sticker and seal the documents yourself and print them yourself and seal them yourself. We encourage more people to print the documents themselves, not only because it's obviously like easier that way for us to save on postage and printing costs. But I find it's a very empowering process to just the actual, because it's in a way we still as a society we function by like this joy pyramid, right? It looks like a small building pyramid or any kind of other pyramids that we as a society function with. The process of like, hey, you can sign a document, you can give somebody else permission using these forms is very empowering and very very funny and very kind of like subverting authority in a that's the clowning aspect of the project.
Yeah, subverting. Yeah, and also I go back, it still has a kind of a profound effect. Like you said, you carried that experience with you of the report card that was refurbished for you.
Yeah.
For a for many years, right?
And so, yeah. And many people put their either certificates of recognition and many other documents. They I see them in the in people's houses, on the fridge, on the wall. So it's you can use the documents. It's actually. Especially the forgiveness license. I mean, a lot of the recipients of services live in Beacon, the neighbors basically. So every once in a while, somebody sees me in the street and it's like, hey, I used my forgiveness license to forgive, myself, this guy, the stepfather or somebody else. I use my forgiveness license.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's move into some of the types of licenses that you do. Can you kind of describe the forgiver's license? How does that look?
And
when do you issue that? Yeah,
the forgiver's license. And again, you can see.
This is all on the website, right?
Exactly. You can see the image on the website, and you can apply on the website too. And you get so it looks basically like a driver's license. And you have Class A forgiver's license and Class B. Class A gives you permission to forgive yourself and others. And Class B is just to forgive others. Now, most people who apply for Class B, I give them a free upgrade and you can get Class A. And it's inspired by a woman called Eva Cole Moses, who's a Holocaust survivor.
Okay.
And in 1995, there's a great documentary about her called Forgiving Dr. Mengele.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, and she has some more interviews that you can see on the website, on YouTube. Or she founded Holocaust Memorial Museum. And so she decided she was supposed to go to Auschwitz to have a ceremony with a Nazi officer who agreed to participate in the ceremony. And she thought, what can she give him as a gift? Because it was still, very meaningful for him to come and participate. And she decided to offer him forgiveness. And she's a very powerful woman. I didn't meet her in person, but just the her story and her... the interviews with her. So she said that she offered him forgiveness, and then she there is a great quote, also I put it in the website in the forgiveness license page, that forgiveness is a way for peace, a way for like people who are forgive are in peace with themselves and they don't start wars, and when you keep that anger. So she forgave not for the Nazi officer, not for the Nazis themselves, for her. There is in one of the interviews, she talks with another Holocaust survivor, and the other survivors are like, how dare you offer forgiveness? Like those, so many people died and who are you to speak in their name? And she said, I don't speak for them. I speak for myself. I cannot live with this burden. And forgiveness is my tool, to heal myself. Right. And she also said that we can teach forgiveness. We can show the benefits of forgiveness. And that's my child who runs.
He got some visitors.
Yeah, I have some visitors. So I saw this movie a few times, and it's really inspiring to me. And as I start doing the documents, and my wife told me, hey, you know, you should do something in the DMV, just because it's going to be funny, because it's like in office hours and clerks and stuff. And I start just thinking about it. I didn't even contact the DMV, or we'll talk about it later. But so I start thinking about the DMV and what does the DMV do, and I you know, license. Driver's license. So I thought about the forgiver's license, and then we added an application. So you have to file form 601C or the compassion exam, and if you pass the compassion exam, so far nobody failed, but you get approved, and once you get approved, you know, you can either send a photo, you can have a photo of yourself as a child, or with a child, or with a pet, or any photo, illustration photo, or I can take a photo of you on the spot and issue your forgiver's license. And you get it in the mail. You get like a driver's license, and you get a notification like, you know, you are now qualified to forgive according to your compassion status. And again, like, people tell me that they use their forgiver's license, and that for me as an artist, every time I hear something like that, I'm like, whoa, I do it with full heart, and I'm happy for people to use it, but I'm humbled to hear that, right. But I'm also like, whoa, that's powerful. I'm also like, I almost like feel a little like I don't know how to react. And so it's a license, you have it in your wallet, I carry it in my wallet, I you know, I have it all the time, and if I get angry, you know, there's no guarantee, and you're not obligated to forgive. It's like a driver's license. If you want to forgive, you have your license, and you know, if it's helpful for you, you can use it. If it's not helpful for you, then you know, you don't have to.
Right.
So that's the forgiver's license. And
You have another popular one, I think, is the joy permit.
Joy permit is one of the most. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you say a little bit about that?
So a joy permit look. The first one I did was looked like a building permit.
Okay.
Then I made a few different sizes too, and. Yeah, somebody said, like, hey, you should do something about happiness. And then I, you know, same thing. I kind of like start thinking happiness, which permits there are, which I'm kind of like reaching out to and see which, because our bureaucratic system works in so many ways, right? You have a permit to build, you have a medical permit, you have this, you know, insurance card, you have everything, almost everything we do in life. You know, if you want to be a therapist, you need a permit for that. And if you have an insurance, you need to sign the invoice, or et cetera, et cetera. So everything we do in life almost have some form of paperwork involved. So I start playing with it. And then the idea of doing a joy permit came. And again, this is one of the most popular documents. It's also very easy to print. So probably around 5,000 joy permits were printed already.
Wow.
And people printed themselves, and I print, you know, thousands or hundreds at a time, so kind of like, give you permission to be joyful for 6 months, and in the same way, it's kind of like, oh wow, I have permission. It's freeing in a way, like, okay, like it's obvious that I am an artist or a clown, or I'm not a person of authority in people's life when I issue this document. Because if I was a person of authority, then it would be, I think it would be a very different feeling. If somebody gave it to his, I don't know, students or employee or something, I think it would be a different experience. And the document looked like an actual DMV or any other state-issued document. It just said the Empowering Clerks Network, and we have a logo, and we have there's a validator and a name and a location and the expiration date. And when I start issuing this to people and I see it over and over again, I said, hey, you know, so, you know, would like a joy permit? Yes. Where are you from? And then I said, like, so this is valid for 6 months. Hmm. And then people have this, like, almost like stress, like, what? You know, only 6 months? as if it's not obvious that it's a joke, that, like, why would you care if I give you for 6 months or for 60 years? Like, why, you know, if I'm not a person of authority? But still, when you have, in the same experience with the refurbished report card, if someone tells you, and if it's written on paper, if someone tells you that, like, hey, you know, this, and that's kind of the narrative therapy. When someone tells you something that's written on the paper, it must be true.
Right.
It must
right.
be. Like, our first instinct is not to question that, but to, and that was so powerful for me in refurbishing my report card, that, hey, this first grade teacher, like, she was wrong. I was like, right, I'm a great child, it says. And now I have another document that says that I'm a great child. So why believe the first one and not the second?
Yes, right.
So when they issue people a job permit, and then I say, hey, you know, so it's only valid for 6 months, and then they have this like this serious that kind of like they and I can explain, you have to try for yourself, print a job permit and do it to someone and see how, you know, it's almost always they have this kind of the same experience. And then I say like, okay, so you can renew it online and you can go to the website and renew it, or you can use Whiteout. And then there's like tension release in people's face. And I see it all like, and so again, as a sort of a clown, it's a joke that I tell all the time. Like sometimes if we have an event, you know, I can tell this like 50 times a day, or you know, every time I issue a job permit, it's still funny and it still release the tension and right. Again subverting the authority, or both the self authority, both the self that like the ourself telling ourselves that we don't have permission to be joyful,
right?
Because of whatever reason, every person has different reasons for that, which of all are the same, you know, either shame or guilt or whatever it is. And now the fact that I can print millions of joy permits, it doesn't mean that I, as Ori, as a person, don't deal with sadness or depression or other issues in life. It doesn't, you know, I'm just printing these documents. The same with the forgiveness lesson. It doesn't mean that I don't get angry or upset or hold resentment for a long time. I just do these documents. And
right. You also do adult special achievement stickers of all kinds, right?
Yeah. And this is so adult special achievement stickers, we figure out the same, after the experience with the golden sticker of the certificate of recognition, I realized how much power stickers have. Like we think that stickers are for kids, but actually I think adults like stickers more than kids.
Yeah, surprise. They won't admit it, but yeah.
Yeah, they won't admit it. I mean, the way, if you see the notary sticker, and the diploma stick, like if you have a document that is approved, and I actually immigrated to the US, so I got citizenship here, so I have to file all sorts of paperwork and documents. So I kind of saw the bureaucratic system in a way that most, I think, American citizens don't go through. I mean, if you have just the DMV as a bureaucratic aspect in your life. So we don't, when a document has a golden sticker, it means that it's real. And with adult special achievement stickers, this was just an idea that, like, I think was running around in social media and that somebody made as a joke. Like, what if adults will have stickers? You know, did the laundry or some, you know, ate healthy today. And then someone tagged me and said, like, oh, you know, you should do it with the Clay Empowering Clerks Network. And I was like, okay. And I designed a document that I can show it on the, you can see it at the website.
Right.
That had various different things that I think adults should be proud of. Caregiver of the day, or dealt with. I got today here. I have a sticker. It's a dealt with my emotions in a constructive way. Did you know I'm funny? A bunch of other stickers that you can get recognition. And you, either in the end of the day, you can get recognition, or when you meet an empowering cleric in an event and you ask yourself, like, hey, you know, what do I deserve a sticker today?
Yeah.
And again, there is this relief when you ask someone, like, both when I approach, many of the office hours that I do are in the street, on either Main Street or other public locations. And when I ask an adult, like, so people see me and they think I'm trying to sell them something, and then it's like, hey, would you like a sticker for good behavior? There's like this, what? And again, it's a very empowering experience when you get a sticker. Yeah. It's and I see it on myself, on my friend, like when you get a sticker, it's like, hey, you know, I've done something today. I took care of my emotions in a constructive way. That's not obvious.
Yep. Okay. So, and I looked at your blog, by the way, and I noticed you set up shop at a Trump rally recently.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about that experience, what it was like to bring these documents to a Trump rally, and what your response was? Yep.
Yeah. So I've done office hours in many, many locations, and I'm always trying to look for different experience to issue these documents. And, you know, with the elections, I'm involved in the election. I have comics, and I went to other rallies, and I saw that Trump is going to Poughkeepsie, and I was like, I was thinking about it, and I had this moment of maybe yes, maybe no. And then I was like, okay, let me just do it. Let's just go there and issue documents to Trump supporters. And to some level, it came by making a comic series with postage stamps. And one of the, I have stamps of Hitler and Stalin, and it started as dialogues between Jimi Hendrix and Lincoln. Yeah, and then I found a Hitler stamp, and I start asking questions. As I grew up in Israel, the Holocaust and Hitler means, I think, very different things to non-Jews, Americans. You learn it's very, it's like the nationalism is very big, and the victimhood is very big too. Mm. It affects people's life in very different way that it's here or for that affect non-Jews. But I start making comics with Hitler stamp. And the first piece was Hitler apologizing, just saying sorry in Hebrew. Mm. And I kept adding more and more pieces. I sent Hitler to the therapist. So Hitler, and I have a Sigmund Freud stamp. So Hitler was laying down and Freud was asking a question in German. And I found out that Hitler was abused as a child.
Yep.
He was beaten by his father. I mean, it's not surprising in any way, but I didn't know that as someone who grew up in an education system that every year talked about the Holocaust. Nobody told me that. Mm. And many other things. And then Hitler and Stalin began having dialogues about, so there's one piece that said, like, you know, are you happy, Joseph? And Joseph Stalin said, like, no, I never thought about it. Et cetera, et cetera. And I asked questions about fascism, about our society, about violence, about how we see both we as Jews see, you know, what does Adolf Hitler mean to us? What does it mean to you? What does it mean to the Jewish people and to Israel? And then as the comic series evolved, I also used the Trump stamp and compared him to Hitler. I was actually one of the, at least as far as I know, I was one of the first people who compared Trump to Hitler. Mm. So there is a piece that both of them are talking in Hebrew and saying some, and I, you know, it's a comparison that many people made already.
Yeah, picking up now, yeah.
And when Trump came to Poughkeepsie, which is 25 minutes away from me, I was like, okay, I have this knowledge about Hitler, about Stalin, about the people who supported Hitler, about the percentage of people who were actually psychopaths who were, you know, did the actual war crimes, and about the Stalin supporters. And so I came to the Trump rally, and now I'm used to my office, like I have a tent and tables and chairs and like, but then I didn't have that. I couldn't contact the organizer and have a table. Like nobody would let me have a table there.
No. Okay.
But I found, so there were the protesters who screamed at the rally attendants. Now, when you scream at someone, you know, you're a fascist, it's very unlikely to start a conversation.
Hmm.
There were no conversations there. And I come from the side who screamed, like, you know, I think that he's a dangerous guy. And I think, like, I have, my opinions are obvious.
Right.
But I dressed, I put leather boots, I put a coat, I had like a hat that looks like a Texas hat. So I came, I wasn't threatening to anyone. Now obviously I wouldn't be able to do it if I was a person of color, or if I was a woman, or if, you know, it would have been different. If I was obviously a transgender person, it would be different. But
right.
I came
right.
in the least threatening way possible that I could have come. And I just, so I didn't have my table and chairs, so I couldn't invite people to my office, but I basically said, like, you know, joy permits from the Center for Supportive Bureaucracy, 6 months joy permits, certificates of recognition. So, somebody issued a forgiveness license, and I issued two or three certificates of recognition and a bunch of joy permits and a few other documents. Now, when people asked me, so people heard that I was in a Trump rally, so they're like, you know, so how was it? How was it? And I think the story is that there's no story.
Yeah.
I came, you know, I issued joy permits, which, if you think about the joy permit, it's kind of like a bizarre document. It's not, I mean, it's very popular. It's very good. People like, I love heavy. Like, we have our joy permits in the window, but it's not a document that, certificate of recognition, maybe it's more personal in a way. The joy permit, I ask people, like, where would you like more joy in your life? So, I mean, it's meaningful in this narrative therapy way, but it's not a legal document in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of people told me, like, I don't need joy. I have Jesus. Or, you know, a few people told me, like, you see the protester, like the Bernie supporters, like they need joy permits.
Mm-hmm.
Because they see the Bernie or any protesters as miserable guy, which is very similar to the way that the protesters see Trump supporters. They see them as, you know, oh, they're miserable. They don't know anything about their life.
Right.
Now, I came And again, I want to do it more. I want to go to more events that are as far from me as I am. Because when I go to music festival, or when I go to any liberal arts culture event that either invite me or that I go voluntarily, I know that, I mean, people are going to be receptive. Some people are going to ask many questions. It's going to be funny. It's going to be interesting. But like, it's, I already somewhat know the response. When I got to a Trump rally, it was a very different response. Like, it was, people were less inviting me. Like, you know, most people, I handed up the permits.
I imagine there was a lot of suspicion about you.
Yeah, there was suspicion that people didn't know what to get. A lot of people took the joy permit. I mean, some of them laughed. Some of them just took it as another ad that, you know, somebody gave an ad. But another document that maybe describe it better, I think, we have the open carry permit for musical instruments. So I was involved in many arguments about gun control, with mostly on social media. And I spent hours and hours like actually talking, I think, pretty respectfully. Overall, you know, I tried to put some humor and I tried to put some, but respectfully, I don't want to go to people even who owns many guns. And from my experience in the army, I became pacifist and hating guns and hating violence and nationalism and army. And I have a lot of things to say about, soldier suicides and a lot of other things about our military that I completely disagree with. But I don't want to come to a veteran or a soldier or somebody who likes guns. I mean, some people like guns. I'm not going to change them by calling them names or by making a document that say like, hey, you know, we need, you know, you say like that one person with a gun, one good guy with a gun can solve, can help to prevent one bad guy with a gun. Like, hey, one person with a banjo or a guitar can do all sorts of things. So I give people permits to open carry the musical instruments. And I think, by bringing humor to the conversation and by bringing like, you know, like, because when somebody see the open carry permit, it looks like an actual permit. So it's the open carry in bold letters, and then underneath it's like for musical instruments. So it brings some lightness to the conversation. And with the Trump supporters, you know, did I change anyone's mind? I don't know. I don't think so. Not that I noticed anything that was. Nobody told me like, oh, you know, I was Trump supporters. Now I changed my mind. But I did offer. So there was a guy there that I issued him personally a certificate of recognition, and I signed it. And you know, we sealed. He has a frame. So now he has a frame document that he received from a stranger, stating his qualities. And I don't know what he's gonna make of it, but in a way, it is a stranger gifting you something.
Right.
So maybe it will make him think about life. Maybe not. I can't tell. I can tell that for me, it was a very powerful experience because I'm going to do it more.
That's great.
I'm going to go to places with people who probably disagree with me, and I'm going to offer my a friend of mine who's started an amazing project called the Emergency Circus. And now they're bringing circus and clowning to refugees from Syria, and they go all over Europe. They went to Lebanon and Turkey and many other. It's really a great project. So in a way, I'm doing the same thing. I'm bringing clowning to many different audiences now. But when you see a clown, when you see a red nose, you already know before the show starts, you know you're going to see clowning.
Right.
When you see me, there's the element of surprise and the element of participatory and therapeutic aspects. Like therapeutic, like more like in a classical therapy. When I ask someone, we have one of the documents is a pain deed. You can claim ownership over your pain and then choose investment opportunities. So that's a heavy document.
Okay. So what's next for the center?
What's next? we have more. I want to. So we have a few things that are coming next. One of them is I send letters to all sorts of government agencies. So the refurbish report card, we made a form, the Center for Supported Bureaucracy made a refurbish report card too. And we offer that. So we have next month in the library in Beacon, we're going to offer refurbish report cards.
Nice.
Okay. To students and adults and teachers, any community member who wants to come and get who had a bad school year for whatever reason, we don't ask questions, there's no background checks, and you get a new refurbished report card.
Yeah.
So we have that, and I want to do more of that. I want to collaborate with school districts, with the Department of Education, with many institutions that are, you know, quote unquote official institutions to issue these documents. Yeah. And I think it would be really cool if any, you know, if one district in issue refurbished report cards at the end of the high school, and all students get refurbished report cards.
Yeah.
I think that would be a really cool use of the idea.
That would be great.
So I'm excited about the library that invited us to do that.
That's great.
Thanks. We also have, we send all sorts of offers to government officials. So I send the deputy of the New York DMV, Mr. Lennon. I sent him adult special achievement stickers, and I offered him for the DMV to issue them together with car registration stickers. So now that's an idea that obviously is less likely to be used, but he actually called me.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he called me. I saw an unrecognized number, and I answered. I was like, "Hey, can I speak with Mr. Alon?" And I was like, "Okay, I've done something bad. It's like I forgot to pay a bill. It's a collection agency or something." And it was like, "Hey, it's Deputy Lennon, and thank you so much. You brought so much. You brought a smile to my heart or to my face." And so that was really sweet.
Yeah, right.
And we have other documents. For example, we have the adoption. You can adopt an uncle or aunt. So if you have a chosen family in your life, a cousin or aunt, so you can officially adopt them. There's a document of adoption that. So we send that to a family court.
Yeah, that's a great. That's a great idea. I think that therapists, our listeners, could use too. Mm-hmm.
And kind of
family of choice type documents.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great.
So we have this communication with the government. And then one of the office hours I did was in the Silverman School of Social Work in New York City. And I want more therapists. That's the reason why I approached you.
Yeah.
Was in a way that I want therapists to hear about these tools.
Oh, it's great.
And I'm happy for them to use it. I'm not trying to charge anything. If somebody, all of the project is based on the gift economy. So if you want to support us, support is welcome. And if you want to just use the tools and use it as a paid forward tool and issue this to your clients, I'm happy for anyone to use any of these documents.
That's great. And yeah, please, listeners, please take full advantage and also be sure to gift too. Mm-hmm. So before I let you go,
sure.
I just wanted to ask you on a side note. I noticed that other people besides therapists are drawn. One of my favorite filmmakers, artists, novelist, Miranda July, linked to you, right? Recently.
Yeah. I sent her documents and she liked it and she shared about it. And
that's great. And then one of my favorite Buddhist teachers, Zen Buddhist teachers, Norman Fisher, I saw, was talking about your documents too. So
he's the Commissioner of Compassion.
How did you connect with him?
I went to a retreat. My wife went to many retreats with him, and I went to one too. And I read his books, and he's my teacher.
He's great. Yep.
Inspired many aspects in both in my life. And so I asked him to be, when I designed the forgiver's license, I looked at the driver's license, and then I saw there was a Commissioner of Motor Vehicle signature. And so I asked him to be the Commissioner of Compassion, and he agreed. And he let me use his signature, and he authorized other documents as well. He enjoys the project a lot, so it's great.
That's great. Okay, so Ori, what's the website? I'm going to have all this information on the show notes, but just so our listeners have, what is the website? And do you have an email, or how can people reach you if they want to ask a question?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, so www.supportiveburocracy.org. Now, I know for me, it took a long time to spell bureaucracy right, but it's not
right.
But just in case, it's supportive. BUREAUCRACY.org.
Great. And do you have an email?
So it's empoweringclerksnetwork@gmail.com.
Great. Ori, I appreciate you taking the time. Wonderful project and projects that you're doing. And keep up the good work. And I'm sure, and I hope our listeners really take advantage of accessing these documents. They're really wonderful and helpful. And I could just see a lot of good coming from them. So
thank you so much, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Ori. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, that's our show. And thank you for listening as always. And please do not hesitate to go to the website, supportivebureaucracy.org. download those documents and start spreading the love. So please do that. And if you feel, and support, and please, it's the gift economy thing. So please, if you have the means, provide some financial resources as well, if you could. So, okay. So as always, you can find us at theradicaltherapist.com. The Radical Therapist is also on Instagram. We're on Twitter at The Rad Therapist. We're on Facebook. And if you want to reach out to me, I love hearing from people that are listening from the show. You can do that at theradicaltherapist@gmail.com. And as always, thank you for your support. My name is Chris Hoff, and this has been the Radical Therapist Podcast.